You're listening to the show on this Wednesday morning. I'm Steve Goldstein with Phil Latzman.
The counterculture of the late 60s and early 70s was marked in part by artists and bands who made their name in protest music, from Creedence Clearwater Revival to Neil Young, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, to The Temptations and Mahalia Jackson, to Country Joe and the Fish, heard here at the definitive music festival of its generation, Woodstock. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Woo-hoo, we're all gonna die. Songs about ending the war, racial tension, and the environment were not only poignant, they were chart-topping hits. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. But where have all of those protest songs gone? With the 2.5 million strong Women's March on Washington, to clashes in Charlottesville, to unpopular lawmakers, the state of politics today has reignited activism. But do we see hit music reflecting that? To answer that, we're joined by University of Colorado professor and author of The Poetry of Pop, Adam Bradley, whose newest book reflects on modern music as the poetic expression of our time. So, Professor, why don't we hear more of this type of music today?
I think part of the question of what happened to protest requires looking back at what protest was at the high point that we often look to. So, I mean, think about the summer of 69 in Woodstock. I mean, that is the emblem of protest in so many ways, with all of these acts speaking out against Vietnam, you know, people, young people across the, as far as the eye could see, gathering together in common cause. But if you looked at the Billboard charts that summer, you'd see things like Henry Mancini's orchestra playing the love theme from Romeo and Juliet, or the Rolling Stones' Honky Tonk Woman, or the Archies' Sugar Sugar. I mean, these are, for the most part, songs that have very little to do with the world beyond matters of love, matters of just getting down and partying. So one thing to recall is that in any given moment, the dominant music, certainly the dominant music of in our radio waves, is often not driven by political motive.
I was talking recently with Alice Cooper, who lives here in the Valley, the king of shock rock, and I asked him that question. I said, you know, I've never heard a lot of protest in your music. I've heard, you know, outlandish, and obviously it's a performance act if you see him on stage, but politics never really got injected into his music. And he said the reason that's the case is because people don't want to hear that when they go to a concert, for the most part. As far as he's concerned, they want to be able to sort of get lost in another world and not have to worry about it. And he also said that CNN is scarier than most of the things that they can talk about on the, you know, in their music.
Yeah, there's probably something to that. I mean, it's similar discussion as we've been having in sports, in fact, where sports are somehow seen as this area of our culture that are places of escape from the politics of every day. But what we're seeing both among athletes and among performing artists is an increasing desire to use the voice that they have to express political ideals and to advocate for causes. I mean, even look at the CMAs this past month. You had Sturgill Simpson, one of the real cutting edge artists in country music, outside busking, not invited, and with a sign soliciting donations for the ACLU. Now, he only raised $13, which might tell you about the crowd, but nonetheless, he's part of it. And then on the other side, you have Neil McCoy with Take a Knee, my, I guess, expletive deleted, we'll call it, which is a song that takes aim at the political activities of people like Colin Kaepernick and other football players who have used the time of the national anthem as a period for protest. So in any given moment, in any given genre, you often have these efforts to speak through and beyond the music to voice political opinion.
So, Professor Bradley, are we entering a new age, a new golden age of protest music?
I think whether we'll find that golden age of protest music or not is yet to be seen. And I'm reminded of the often quoted words attributed to Harry Belafonte, that when the movement is strong, the music is strong. And it may be a matter of a political movement or movements taking shape and articulating themselves in such a clear fashion that the music, the soundtrack, must necessarily emerge in response to the actions of the people. There's a reciprocal relationship between the movements and the music.
So as somebody who has studied this, who teaches this, who looks into the meanings of lyrics as much as you do, Professor, what are your favorite protest songs? Or do you have a favorite protest song?
The song that I go back to time and time again is Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come from 1964. The reason being that we can always look to that change. We can always look for it to come, and it's always an unperfected thing in America. So A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke.
Beautiful choice. Adam Bradley is professor of English at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and the author of The Book of Rhymes, Anthology of Rap. His newest book is The Poetry of Pop, talking about protest songs. Professor Bradley, thanks for your time and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. This is such a pleasure, Phil. Thank you.
It's been a long time coming, but I know change.